Live and Lansing, Jack Ebling is on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
Welcome back. Jack Ebling here, Ebling and You, 1320 WILS. Appreciate Brian Jeffries giving us his legal perspective, member of Lansing City Council. Want to bring in our next guest, Kyle Malin, the editor of MERS newsletter and columnist with City Pulse. Hello, Kyle. How are you?
Oh, great. How are you doing, Jack?
Just fine. I am looking at some statistics here, which apparently are surprising to some people, that 4,755 state employees have taken the retirement option under a controversial incentive. And what does this mean in terms of the state budget?
Well, it means that we're going to surpass the amount of money we thought we were going to save with the state budget. Remember, they thought we were going to get $60 million worth of savings by enticing folks to leave early. But this is a larger number than we got in 2002 when Engler tried to do well. Then it was called an early out. This is called an early retirement package because there's a bit of a stick to go along with the carrot, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to save a lot more money than we previously expected. How much more, we won't know until the next administration comes in and they kind of work out who they're going to replace and under what circumstance. But it's better than what we expected from a state budget standpoint as far as an experience standpoint and how this is going to improve the efficiency of state government. I think it's pretty debatable if this is a net positive.
Any idea why so many more people accepted the retirement offer?
Well, yeah, we don't know when we're going to get another one. state employees are very in key with when early retirements are offered. You know, when Engler offered one in 2002, it wasn't the first time. And so folks who are ready or prepared to retire kind of wait for these early outs because they're a special deal. You know, your retirement is factored by a multiplier of 1.5, so a salary or a compensation is multiplied by that percentage. Well, at an early out, that percentage is upped. And so in this case, it was 1.55. I mean, it's not a huge number, but, you know, it's better. You know, more money is better than less, right? So
Right. Folks
will go ahead and sign up. I mean, to give folks some idea about the numbers involved here, if we had 4,700 people basically this time.
Yeah.
In 2002, we only had about 4,000, so we had an increase there. And we only thought we were going to get 3,400.
Right.
So, I mean, that's 1,200 more than we thought. And to put the number into perspective, so what does 4,700 mean? Well, you got to figure there's about 52,000 state employees, so that means 9% of every state employee for the state of Michigan is going to retire early. Which really, if you think about it, is, you know, almost 1 in 10. That's pretty, it's pretty impressive.
Right.
And how are they going to fill these people back in? Well, apparently the direct service employees will be replaced 1-to-1. And a direct service employee is somebody like a Department of Human Services caseworker, for example.
But they're going to be bringing someone in at a lower salary than someone who's been there for that length of time, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, that, I mean, that's the money saver.
For what they were paying one, who had been been there 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And so that's where they save some money. I mean, you get to hire someone in a lower salary. I mean, it puts a little bit more strain on the state retirement system. But, I mean, in the short term for the budget, it works out great.
Right. You think there will be many of these positions, Kyle, that are not filled?
Yeah. I mean, outside of these direct service positions, they're estimating that two positions for every three will be refilled. So, what, 66%?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there will be a few that won't get replaced. And I think a lot of them will be in the management positions, too. I think they'll try and knock off a few layers of government bureaucracy and try and go about it that way as opposed to the people at the very ground level who do a lot of the grunt work.
All right. Rick Snyder coming into Lansing and has had a series of meetings and a meeting with all of the new legislators and the freshman caucus and also very, very busy on the transition front. What's your take on the transition team that he has appointed?
Well, two things strike out to me here. First, he is going to the old Engler clan. And you could make some arguments, well, he's just going to be like Engler. Well, The thing is the people who he's appointed so far are people who have been out of government for some time and have had some success in the private sector. The Rothwells, Mark Murray, Dick Postumus, all of these people were in government, yeah, when Engler was here. But since then have gone to the private sector and have been successful and had to be lured back into government to be of assistance. What that tells me is that Rick Snyder has a lot of respect for people who have been able to have success both inside and outside government. And there are people who know his talk, and they know the talk of Lansing, and maybe can bridge the gap a little bit. So that was something that struck me. And then, of course, his pick for state treasurer, Andy Dillon, was obviously an attempt to show that he was going to reach across the aisle and put his money where his mouth is on being bipartisan and bringing in somebody who could have been his opponent in the general election, Andy Dillon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of struck me. I don't know how many more of these that you're going to see as far as Democrats, but I think you'll see a healthy dose of former lawmakers come in, maybe some people from the business community. But you got to realize that Snyder is about putting the right people in the right position. That's always been his kind of take.
Mm-hmm.
And so to expect that he was going to take a bunch of green leaves green branches and stick them all over state government,
right,
is just folly. That's not his track record. He wouldn't have done that. I mean, he's going to stick in people with some experience, but who aren't completely tainted by a lifetime of work on the public trough.
Kyle, someone suggested to me that Rick Snyder's reaching across the political aisle to tap Andy Dillon was really not that much of a stretch. And if you had lined up all of the candidates for governor on a spectrum from 0 to 100, that Rick Snyder and Andy Dillon were about as close as a Republican and a Democrat are going to be in 2010.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the jokes that we had here in the office, that if Snyder and Dillon ran against each other, there'd be hard differentiating between which one was the Republican and which one was the Democrat.
Right.
You know, the Democrats weren't all that excited to have Rick Snyder or Andy Dillon as their nominee, which is why they rallied around Verge there at the end. But, obviously, you know, Andy is not your stereotypical Democrat, but, you know, what do you expect him to bring in? You know, Liz Brader from Ann Arbor, you know, a true believer. He's not going to do that either. But just like he isn't going to go on the other side of the spectrum and get some ultra-conservative here to be his treasurer as well. I mean, now that would have been maybe some disconcerting to the moderates who actually put him in this position to lead the state. You know, you look at the numbers in the primary and the general election, this election was pretty much decided there in the primary because that's where all the independent voters go. You know, I think I told you last week, independents decide elections. They decide in the primary. We got Rick Snyder. And so they don't want an ideologue as their governor. And so I think they're probably happy if they're going to pick a Democrat, you might as well pick the most moderate one possible.
Last question, Kyle, and I don't know if there's an answer for this, but let's say in the Republican primary, let's go way back to the summer, that either Pete Hoekstra or Mike Cox had dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one had been the nominee. It was a very close race, and the vote of the more conservative elements of the Republican Party was kind of chopped up.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that we had Virge Bernero against Mike Cox.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be the governor-elect today?
Oh, Mike Cox would be.
So it wouldn't have mattered.
No.
It would not have mattered that there was no one in the Republican primary that Virge Bernero was going to beat, given the political climate?
No. No. In fact, I was up in Traverse City yesterday speaking to the Michigan Library Association. I joked that they could have put Mickey Mouse on the ballot, but as long as he had an R after his name and he was running for governor, he probably would have still won with 55% of the vote. You know, Ruth Johnson and Bill Schuette both ran very, very different campaigns for their respective positions and both got about the same percentage. And I would guess that if Mike Cox was the nominee, he would have probably ended up with right around the same percentage and would have won despite, I'm sure, a much uglier campaign run by the Democrats.
Well, then that validates the behavior of a couple of people I know who wanted to vote in the Republican primary because they wanted to be sure that they had the lesser of the evils, as they described it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just being politically savvy on their part. I mean, they saw the writing on the wall, obviously, and knew that if Mike Cox was the nominee or Pete Hoekstra was the nominee on the Republican side, they were going to win.
Right.
I mean, there's no question about it. And then also, if you want to go back even further, if you want to say, well, what happens if Pete Hoekstra doesn't run? And what happens if Mike Bouchard doesn't run? And if it's just Mike Cox against Rick Snyder, I think we have a very different result.
Yeah. Kyle, I said last question, I lied. I've got one more quick one for you. We've asked a couple people this week. If you were on the transition team or you were had the ear of Rick Snyder and you could suggest one person who must be in this administration, who would it be?
I would give a plug to Ken Sickema.
Okay.
Former Senate Majority Leader.
All right.
I think he has just been around the block as far as being a pragmatic policymaker.
Okay.
He's just, I think he puts policy before politics. That's always been my impression of him when I've watched him in action.
Mm-hmm.
I've had great respect for what he's done.
Right.
And I think he'd have a lot of respect people here in the Capitol.
Kyle Mullen, the editor of MERS Newsletter, columnist with City Pulse. Kyle, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Jack.